Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
On 91.2 FM and around the world at RadioLeMond.com. This is Haggerty Radio Le Mans.
Haggerty Radio Le Mans 91.2 FM for 2023. And I've come up to a little oasis of quiet, actually. Amazing how much difference it makes just being a couple of motor coaches and hospitality areas off the main drag at the back of the paddock. This is where CrowdStrike are based. And I'm with George Kurtz. George, Le Mans, fulfillment of a dream. Welcome to our church, I suppose. We've been here for such a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a dream. I came here over a decade ago, watched Audi dominate, and for many years, even growing up as a kid, it's like, man, that would be a place I'd love to go and ultimately race one day. And we put a lot of work in over the years, and we're in a position to be here, and I'm here for the first time, and I'm really excited about it.
I remember my first time. It was 1989 with the Sauber Mercedes victory, and just coming here as a spectator is spectacular. I cannot even imagine what it must be like to come here as a competitor. I mean, are there even words?
Well, it's hard to put in words. This is such an iconic race, and the crowds are, you know, massive. And now, post-COVID, I'm sure the parade is going to be just spectacular. So when you put it all together, when you first get out on the track, it's a little bit daunting. And, you got to still remember you're on public roads out there. It's kind of crazy, but... overall, you know, we're just going to try to keep our head down and make laps and do the best we can.
You were out in the early session of test, first opportunity in the real world, yes, in a race car. I'm sure you've done the Sims, and I'm sure you've driven the higher car around. But does it get any better than pulling out the pits and in your race car and looking up and seeing the Dunlop Bridge?
It really doesn't. You know, just to pull out and see the Dunlop Bridge and just go out for the first time and just realize, you know, how fast you're actually going. And of course, I did a lot of simulator laps, and there's nothing that can really prepare you until you put some laps down on the track. And there's so many iconic, you know, turns and curves and things that you watch on video and you see on TV, and until you get out there in a real race car going 200, you know, plus kilometers, it's just spectacular.
Let's talk a little bit about your development and CrowdStrike Racing's development. First of all, CrowdStrike. We know the name. Yep. We've seen it on the Formula One safety cars. We've seen it on your race cars as well. Let's talk about why CrowdStrike is involved in racing, first of all. We know you're a petrol head, but that isn't enough, yep, nowadays. There has to be a return on investment for any company. Yep. So why CrowdStrike? And where are the synergies, if you will, between what you guys do in cybersecurity and what's going on at the very highest levels of racing?
Sure. We're one of the leading providers of cybersecurity, stopping breaches. And in the cybersecurity world, it's all about speed. If you think about how quickly the adversary moves and how much technology is actually needed and the speed and precision to be able to stop those breaches, that's really the synergy. And we first got pulled into, we've been racing, you know, for a while with CrowdStrike Racing. We first got pulled into the F1 camps because Mercedes became a customer, and we just had a great relationship, so we put the name on the car, and we've done a lot of great things with them. But the synergy is, you know, precision, speed, and you just always have to try to get things right. And for us, post our IPO, it's been a great branding exercise. People knew us in the U.S., but they didn't always know us around the world, and now they see the cars around the world. They may not know exactly what we do, which is why we're talking about it, but they've heard of CrowdStrike.
Name recognition is the first thing. They go, oh, yeah, that's that CrowdStrike thing. I have no clue what they do, but I know CrowdStrike. So moving on to phase two there. You were talking there about cybersecurity like the adversaries are competitors, that you've got to move quicker than they have, you've got to strategize better than they have. Am I on the right track there at all?
Well, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of software that's out there that isn't human versus human. You know, use a spreadsheet, somebody builds it, and you put some numbers into it. But when you think about cybersecurity, it's really one competitor versus another competitor. It just happens to be we're the good guys, and you know, the adversaries are the bad folks. So they've got their own playbook. They have to study. They have to be prepared. They have to be quick. And it's a lot of the same things in racing. You know, you really got to spend the time before you get on the track and try to be as best prepared as you can and then execute. And that's what we try to do.
Make no mistakes, there's some clever people trying to get hold of your private data, whoever you are, around the world. You've got to be cleverer. You've got to be faster. You've got to use all the tools. Without giving anything away, of course, I know you wouldn't. How do you do that, and how do you keep that one step, that one pit stop, that one strategic movement, if you like, if we're using racing terms, how do you keep ahead?
Well, like most things in the world, including now racing, artificial intelligence has become super popular. We started using it over a decade ago, so it's not a new thing for us. And those are the sort of techniques that we use to actually be able to predict whether there's something good or bad in the environment and to be able to stop it.
And you use a lot of cloud-based, and people talk about the cloud quite as if it's nothing, but the clouds are not relatively new, but it's been around for a little while. But a lot of people don't understand what the cloud is. What is the cloud?
Well, the cloud is basically a whole bunch of servers that sit in somebody else's data center that you get to rent. And when we think about cloud-based, basically the brain of our system sits in the cloud. So at a massive scale, we can calculate all these mathematical equations and figure out from an AI perspective what's good or bad. So we use lots of servers that sit somewhere else.
I like the sound of that. All right, so split-second decision-making, lots of calculations a second, speed, reliability, predicting what might be happening. I really see the synergy now between what you're doing and the racing. So let's talk about your development. I see you race quite a lot in IMSA in the States. You're getting behind the wheel of everything and anything, it seems. Now, sometimes that can be confusing for a driver. I heard people like yourselves described by Stefan Vent, actually, from AMG, described a gentleman who come racing as it was late arriving professionals, late starting professionals, is what he said, which I thought was a great analogy. It seems to me that all that different driving hasn't confused you at all. It's built up your knowledge base and built up your confidence. You, if I may say so, you have come along leaps and bounds in the last year or 18 months. Are you feeling that yourself? Do you feel there was almost a eureka moment for you when everything opened up?
Yeah, I think, well, obviously we've been at it for a while and working with Colin Brown, as you know, and I think there's no substitute for seat time. And one of the things that we decided to do was in the race program was to actually do different types of racing. So spent a lot of time doing GT racing. Mm-hmm. And then with Colin and Core over the years, we did P3 and now P2. And there's a lot of folks who are really good at GT or really good at P2. But I think being able to go between GT and between P2 and understand the differences of the car and the weight transfer and the balance and how you make speed, I think that's been the eureka moment, and putting all of these cars together. And then, you know, over the last couple of years, not that I raced it, I had a chance to drive a couple of the modern Formula One cars with Mercedes, the W12 and even the W04.
Oh, it sucks to be you, man. It sucks to be you.
But you spend enough time with the team and the simulator and those sort of things, and I think it just all adds up to try to build that in your toolkit.
So all of these different experiences have added to that toolkit, have added to that knowledge base. Again, I'm seeing similarities with what you do in your day job as well, because you're building up effectively a database.
Yeah, you're building up, you know, you think about all the different turns that are out there. You always try to look at a turn and say, oh, I know that one. It's, you know, like the King of Road America, or it's like whatever it is, right? And you try to use that in your database, and then each car, again, has a different way it performs and how you can roll speed and how it breaks. And you try to take the experience and how the car feels and you just apply it to each car you get into. So I think driving different classes of cars is a real benefit if you could keep at it, and not once in a while, but consistently try to do it.
There will be people listening to this now on Hagerty Radio Le Mans who will be saying, wow, that's pretty impressive that you guys can do that and that you personally, George, can do that. It's been my experience down through the years that people who are analytical in their mindset take to racing at the higher levels really well, because there is so much data in it, and sitting down with your pro driver, your mentor, and looking at something on a screen, you're used to doing that. Has that been a benefit for you, that you can transfer your skills that you've had for a longer time since you've been race driving into that race driving environment?
I think so, because when you first start out in racing, there's just a lot of things you have to kind of focus on. And really what I try to do is look at the data, work with Colin, and then focus on the top three things that we have to do. So if you can focus on the top three things instead of 20 things, you can just chip them off your list, check them off your list, and then you go on to the next three thing. And I think that three approach has really served me well over the years.
That's interesting, because I've talked to a lot of people who have learned the Nordschleife like that. You try to learn a 15.8 mile circuit and it blows your mind. You break it down into manageable chunks and the task doesn't seem as big. Very, very interesting. All right, looking forward to this weekend. Keep breathing. You only get it to do it your first time once. There's an awful lot to do between now and Saturday at 4 o'clock. What's the big ticket items for you as far as a fan, because you are a fan, is concerned, and as far as a driver and involvement in the team are concerned?
I think from the fan perspective, it's just take it all in. It's such a unique experience. You have to be excited to be here, and 100th anniversary is just super special. From a driver experience, it's really, make sure I get to learn the track, and the track changes over time. It was super dusty and dirty when I went out the first time, and it'll get better and better. And try to minimize mistakes. It's easy to make a mistake here. And then, just keep chipping away. You can't get seconds at a time. Well, I guess you can probably here, because if you get a good exit, it's a few seconds. But, just keep chipping away until we get to a good spot. And I got two great, pro drivers in Colin and James. And, just do what I always do. Just try to be methodical and do the best I can.
Not to put any more pressure on than you do yourself, because I know you take this very seriously, but you're in a category where we kind of expect James and Colin to be able to do what they do, because that's what they do. In a class that is so evenly matched, the difference is the bronze driver. It's as simple as that. That's you. So in a lot of ways, how you go, the team will go. And you know that. I can see that in your eyes.
Yeah. Well, you keep reminding me of that. it's absolutely true. And, in Le Mans, as opposed to some of the things we do in IMSA, you don't want to fall behind too much, because you don't have the benefit of some of the safety cars and kind of getting the laps back. So I think if we can minimize the mistakes and just have a decent pace, I think that's really the focus for the race. And then we'll let those pro guys do what they do, and we'll see what happens at the end. There's a lot of things that can happen, and I think it's probably the car that stays out of trouble and keeps good pace that's gonna be on the podium at the end.
Wish you all the best. Thank you for your support in all forms of motorsport, and of course on Haggerty Radio Le Mans this weekend. George, envy doesn't even begin to describe it, but that said, there's a whole load of us here at the track and further afield that if we could do it, we'd be doing exactly the same. You're representing all of our hopes and dreams. Thanks for talking to us.
Well, thanks, and with enough time, effort and work, it's all possible. So it's a pleasure to chat with you, and look forward to hearing you call the race.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.